Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. So Barry Trotz went on the midday show today. Not going to say I'm jealous, but, you know, always like having Barry on our show. But you know what? He's got to go on the other shows, too. And I found it fascinating. And I actually found it, you know, interesting that they were the ones that were, you know, asking the Barry questions, and I'm asking Andrew Burnett questions. And talking to Andrew Burnett, which we did earlier this week, very different than talking to Barry. Because the reality about Barry Trotz is he's an open book. Now, he may not exactly answer the question the way you asked it. He may not exactly, but he'll get to the truth some point in like a 3-minute answer. Which is, you know, part of the reason why we love him. But Barry Trotz was on the midday show today. And I was listening to it after the fact, you know, because I was tied up when he was on, but I was like, I got to listen to what Barry Trotz had to say. And I was listening to it, and there was one thing where my head popped up. And I was like, okay, I think everybody needs to hear this. So last week, UC Soros signs for 8 years at 774. We knew there was going to be trade protection because we asked Barry on Monday, if there's a deal, are you going to give trade protection? He said yes, but he said it's only going to be some, and there has to be a limit. Robbie asked him about the specific trade protection on whatever day it was. I guess it was Monday of this week. And Barry was not exactly committal as to what it was, you know, what they were actually going to give in terms of trade protection. And so I'm listening to that, and I'm like, huh. But I just, it's my understanding that Soros' trade protection is up front, and the Predators can move Soros if they want to on the back end. And I say that because as soon as they signed Soros, everybody was like, well, what does that mean for Askarov? And not just like the fans here, but people around the league. You know, I'm listening to Boomer Gordon. And he's like, I mean, this means that that has to be the end for Askarov. There's no way that they can keep Askarov at Milwaukee and transition him over and this and that. And what? So here's what Barry said today on the midday show. For everybody out there asking, after they signed Soros, what does this mean for Yaroslav Askarov, the number one goalie prospect in the NHL? What does it mean? Here's what Barry said today on the midday show, which was embedded in, I don't even remember what the question was, but it was in one of the answers. It was embedded in. He told you exactly what the organization's plan is.
The sky's the limit with this young man. So we want to make sure that when he makes it, gets to the NHL, that he is going to be a star goalie. And if he's playing now with UC Soros and he's the backup, then that I think that's a great situation. And then at some point, you know, he's going to be, the star goalie that he can be. So at that point, we'll have to make a decision on what we do there. The other option is that if I get, you know, a team call me with a something that makes sense for the long term of the success of the Predators, then I will move that asset to you know, to another team and maybe reposition it, maybe at forward or defense. I got to protect the organization, and there's not one player that's bigger than the organization.
Okay, he just told you. Right now, UC Soros is a starting goalie. They think Yaroslav Askarov has all the talent in the world. They think that he's going to be a star. Not what I think. That's what they think because he just said it. I think this young man has the potential to be the star. He talked in the same interview about how there are some technical aspects of his game that need to get better, and they brought in Mitch Korn, who is the goalie coach guru. He's kind of the Bill Callahan of the goalie position. You know, they brought him in here to work with Askarov on that, but they think that he can be a star. I mean, the guy that Barry Trotz was comparing Yaroslav Askarov to this week was Pekka Rinne. And we know what he thinks of Pekka Rinne, and we know how good Pekka Rinne was. So Barry told you right then and there, we think this young man can be a star. We're going to get it to a point, hopefully, where it can be, you know, Soros is 1A, and he's 1B. And then at some point, this is what Barry said, quote, at some point we'll have to make a decision. Today, last Friday when they signed the deal, that's not the point where they've made the decision. If they gave UC Soros a full no move throughout the duration of this new contract, then they would have made their decision. I am fascinated to see what the exact terms of the no move for Soros end up being. But it is my understanding that it is very tight early and it is more liberal late. The Predators can get out of the deal. And so when it comes to Askarov, Barry is telling you exactly what they're doing. Instead of trying to come up in your head with some idea of like, I mean, what does this mean for Askarov? Does this mean that he told you? He told you right there exactly what it meant. He says, at some point, we'll have to make a decision. Then if somebody calls me and they want to give me something for this asset, maybe I do make a move for a forward or a defenseman and I trade the goalie because I'll do whatever is in the best interest of the Predators. But he's not giving Askarov away. He's not giving up on Askarov. He's not dictating today that UC Soros will be the Predators goalie for the next 9 years. It's simple. If he doesn't develop and he doesn't become the guy, then they're protected with Soros in net. If he ends up becoming the guy and becomes Pecorine and becomes better than Soros, then they'll move Soros. It's not complicated. He's made it abundantly clear. And yet, I guarantee you, even after he said that, and again, this is Barry Trotz, who pretty much tells the truth 100% of the time. Even after that, people will still say, well, there's no way that they can actually really care about Askarov. Really? Because he just said that he thinks he might be as good as Pecorine. He thinks he might become a huge star. Like, imagine if there was a minor league for the NFL. AAA. Where would you have rather had Will Levis playing quarterback last year? The majors? Behind that horrible offensive line? Or would you have liked him to get reps running the system at AAA? That's what the Packers did with Jordan Love. I don't think the Packers looked at themselves and said, you know, in 3 years we'll be ready to move off Aaron and move to Jordan. I think it was a, let's see. Let's see if Jordan develops, and if Jordan develops and then Aaron wants to be a diva, we'll move off of Aaron and we'll move to Jordan. That's where the Predators are with the goalies. I think the moral of the story here, even though, you know, it's a big contract, 8-year contract. Well, Shea Weber signed a 15-year contract. They still moved him. The moral of the story is that the Soros contract signed last Friday, technically signed on Monday, the Soros contract is not the end of the road for Yaroslav Askarov with the Predators. And I believe them when they say that because they have not deviated from that message and they have not lied to us about any of this previously. They told us they were going to sign Soros to a deal. They told us they were going to give Soros some trade protection. They told us there was going to be a limit on the trade protection with Soros. Barry said about a month ago after they traded Ryan McDonagh back to Tampa Bay, Barry came on this show and he said, at some point, 4 years from now, they'll probably have to make a decision, one guy or the other. But we're not there today. So if anybody ever asks you, or if you ever think in your head, what are they going to do with Yaroslav Askarov, you have your answer. He told you. They're going to develop him. They're eventually going to bring him up. He's going to back up Soros. They might transition it more to a 1A, 1B, and then they're going to pick a guy. And as we've learned with sports, 9 times out of 10, Ian, who does the tie go to?
What do you mean?
Between two guys, one older, one younger, Steve Young, Joe Montana,
always the younger
Brett
guy.
Favre, Aaron Rodgers, it's yeah, always the younger guy.
Yeah.
Tie always goes to the younger guy. Remember that. So that's, you know, Barry's told you what they're doing. So don't ask anymore because that's the answer. Now, there is something that they did as far as all this goalie maneuvering is concerned that I do not understand at all. I still don't understand. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Development is everything, and sometimes not only the player thinks he should be playing in the NHL now, of course they do. I can ask any 19 or 20 year old, and I said, you know, they all think they should play in the NHL now. But to be productive and have a long career, you sometimes have to go through that. So if Askarov comes in and he is the second best goalie, then we'll figure it out after that. If he's the third best goalie, then he may have to start in Milwaukee, and that will not hurt him.
That was Barry Trotz again on the Midday Show today saying, hey, whatever happens with Askarov will be in the best interest of Askarov. You know, the development is the most important thing. He talked about Pekka. Now, Pekka came on the show about a month ago, and Pekka said that, hey, going down to Milwaukee for the third year was the worst thing in the world. It was the worst feeling. But in hindsight, I wish I had a crystal ball so I could see how important that third year was. And I think that it's very easy, especially having Pekka on the coaching staff, I think it is very easy to go to Askarov and point to Pekka and say, hey, it's okay to play the third year in the AHL, and it doesn't mean that we don't believe in you. It doesn't mean that you can't be a superstar goalie in this league. Pekka, how much money have you made over the years? $70 million. Probably made somewhere around there. $70 million. He played 3 years in Milwaukee. It'll be okay. So that I understand. And I understand the idea of wanting to send him to Milwaukee where he'll play almost every night, putting him with Mitch Korn, who is the goalie coach guru, and letting him work through his mistakes on a team that most of us, not all of us because some of us do, but most of us don't give a rat's ass about. That's the Milwaukee Admirals. You start doing things up here, we care. Do them down there, again, there are some people out there that care, but most of us don't. What I don't understand is why did they give Scott Wedgwood a two-year contract? Like, they brought Scott Wedgwood in to be the backup. Kevin Lankinen left. Do we even know, Ian, where Kevin Lankinen went? I don't think I saw where he signed. I'm sure he signed, but do we
know? I don't think he has signed. I'm sure we would have seen that by now.
Kevin Lankinen has not signed a contract yet?
I'll double check, but I haven't seen anything about that. Surely we would have seen or heard by now.
Isn't the money all gone now? Isn't this like the NFL? Like once you
I don't
get
know,
past
Tarasenko just signed for 2 years for $9.5 or something like that. Which
$9.5 for Tarasenko?
Not per year.
Oh.
Total, sorry.
I was like, whoa.
Four, you know, whatever that is, 4.25 with Detroit.
Not a Tarasenko guy anymore. I think he and Kane, I think, have kind of gone from superstar to role player, which I'm afraid may happen with some of the guys here, but right now they're still 40-goal scorers. But, again, a two-year deal for Wedgwood. I understand the idea that Lankinen wants to go somewhere maybe where he can start, although I don't know where that's going to be, since, again, a lot of the media a lot of the media hasn't talked about any of these goalie situations and brought Lankinen into it, which makes me think the teams aren't talking to the media saying Lankinen, you know, would be an option. But I think the Predators assumed Lankinen was going to go try to get some more playing time, and that makes sense, or get a better contract, so that makes sense. So they let him go. That's fine. They went and signed Wedgwood. Wedgwood was on my board last Friday when I looked and I said, okay, who, you know, do the Predators need to target in free agency? Because Wedgwood was a true backup free agent. Totally fine with them signing him. But I don't understand why they signed him to a two-year contract. And then it's like, well, maybe that's what it would take. Maybe in order to get Wedgwood, if you wanted him to be the backup goaltender, maybe you had to give him the two-year deal. And that's fine, but why would I bend what I really need, which is a goalie for 1 year, a backup goalie for 1 year? Why would I do that when all these other goalies are taking one-year deals? Ilya Samsonov, a one-year deal in Vegas. Yeah, he sucks, but it's the backup goalie. I'm sure Wedgwood sucks too. James Reimer, one-year deal. He's been around for forever. But it is what it is. Matt Murray, one-year deal. You know what's crazy about Matt Murray? What's crazy to me about Matt Murray is that Matt Murray was supposed to be like the future in net and won those two cups with the Penguins, and since then has not been heard from. And he's played on like six different teams. But he signed a one-year deal. The guy who was supposed to be the savior in Edmonton, Campbell, Jack Campbell, he signed a one-year deal. My thing is I understand, you know, hey, you want to be able to have a respectable backup goalie, fine, whatever, that's your business. But if my plan is to eventually have Askarov back up Soros, and then one day it be a 1A, 1B, and then maybe if Askarov becomes a superstar, transitioning to Askarov and then trading Soros, why would I sign the backup goalie whose really only job is to be there in case something happens to Soros? Why would I sign him to a two-year deal? I mean, I understand the idea of sitting down with Yaroslav Askarov, who thinks he's ready for the NHL and has played in the NHL, I believe, each of the last 2 years. I think he got one game, Ian, if I'm not mistaken, under John Hines.
Who? I'm sorry?
Askarov. Got one game under Hines.
I think so, yep.
Yeah. So one game under Hines and then got a couple of games last year. And he wants to play in the NHL right now. As Barry has said, everybody wants to play in the NHL. So he's no different than everybody else, but it's obvious he wants to play in the NHL. You can sit down with him and you can say, hey, you can do a third year in Milwaukee. Pekka did a third year in Milwaukee, and look what it did for him. You're only 22 years old. You know, goalies take a little bit longer. It's fine. It's okay. Don't worry about it. You can't sit down with him and say, we want you to go back for a third and a fourth year. This is not college. You cannot convince him. Like, if you were to sit down with him today and you're trying to get him into the right mood and the right attitude, you know, we had Andrew Burnett on the other day, and Andrew Burnett, I said, what do you say to him? And he said, you know, I tell him, hey, take it one day at a time. You know, it's easy to get discouraged, but don't. Just take it one practice at a time. Take it one game at a time. Take it one day at a time. Hard to do that if the other goalie's in front of you. It's one thing to have Soros in front of you. It's another thing of, hey, you might not even be the backup because they signed a backup for 2 years. So I don't understand that. I mean, if Ilya Samsonov's taking a one-year deal, I don't know why you had to give Wedgwood a two-year deal. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bruce is up next on Scott Wedgwood. Thank you for calling and thank you for waiting. What's up, Bruce?
I have a theory on why they signed Wedgwood to 2 years.
Okay.
If Askarov wins the backup job at camp or sometime during the season, the plan is going to be to send Wedgwood down to Milwaukee. It makes it more difficult for another team to claim him if they have to hold on to him and pay him for 2 years. So I think the signing of the 2 years was to make it harder for another team to snag him if we decide to send him to Milwaukee.
Can he be sent to Milwaukee?
Yes. He can absolutely be sent, but he'd have to clear waivers. So, again, since he's got enough games, he would have to clear waivers. He's on a two-way contract, so he's going to make the same money either way. But if we send him to Milwaukee, he would have to clear waivers. It's more difficult for a team to make the decision to claim him if they've got to pay him for 2 years compared to one.
Interesting thought, Bruce. Thank you for the call. Ian, does that theory check out for you?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that a little bit more for a second. I guess the waivers thing makes sense. He would have to go through waivers.
I don't totally understand how the whole waivers and cap process works in hockey.
Yeah.
Because it gets complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember when the Predators, you know, basically essentially fired Mike Ribeiro. I don't know if you remember that, but it was like all complicated of how they pushed him through waivers and sent him down, but then he didn't go, but then he's, I don't even totally remember it. I mean, it's, the NHL's weird in that way. It could make sense that...
I mean, yeah, that means his contract and rights would pretty much be available to all NHL teams. And so if you were to claim him, you would also claim his contract.
Here's the thing, though. They're not going to waive him this year. Like, they're not going to waive him this year. They would waive him next year when he'd have 1 year left on the deal. And even then, what they're going to do this year is... And Barry even alluded to this on his midday show interview. They are going to spot start Askarov this year. So, again, if Saros is going 60 games, which is two-thirds, I believe my math is right. If Saros is going 60 games, I think 60 games would be three-fourths. So if he's going, I think he'll probably go 60 games. Then what that means is, you know, for every four games they play, obviously one of them Saros isn't going to play. So think of it like a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday. Well, what they'll do is they'll have Saros sit that out on an emergency basis. They'll call up Askarov for one game. Askarov will play and he'll go back down. And then the next time that that comes up, Wedgwood will start. And it would not surprise me if Askarov, if Saros plays 60 games, Wedgwood plays 14 and Askarov plays 8. He's going to get more spot starts this year. So then if your theory is, well, then waive him after that, and people want, well, they'll only have 1 year left on the deal anyways. So I'm not sure that that totally sniffs out, though at least I do appreciate the creativity and the thinking. Because I don't understand why they would give him 2 years. Joshua says, 2 years less in the cap hit. If you offered a 1 year deal, he would want more money. So they're lowering the AAV by giving him 2 years. Then go sign Samsonov or go sign some other Scarbini. The backup goalie position, I don't get too worked up in. And I know Willie will tell you, if you look at the numbers, the Predators wouldn't have made the playoffs without Kevin Lankinen. But could they have put in, you know, Connor Ingram, for instance, who was here once upon a time? Could he have played those games and you have won enough to get into playoffs? I think yes. So make that of what you will. All right, a lot of you want to weigh in on the YouTube chat, so we will. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Plus, coming up next on the program, Barry keeps talking about these young guys. I'm not sure I'm as sold on all these young guys as Barry Trotz seems to be the way he keeps talking about these young guys. We'll get to that coming up next. Here on the program, Stillman and Company. Let's talk Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Hiller, they are proud supporters. That's right, proud supporters of the Nashville Predators, and they are celebrating their 34th birthday this year. They're bringing the celebration to you with the birthday bash this month. From now until July 31st, enjoy a free smart thermostat with select new HVAC systems, a free water test, and free leak detection and shutoff valves with tankless water heaters. And by 10, you'll get 2 free landscape lights. It's pretty good. Celebrate Hiller's birthday bash all month long. Visit happyhiller.com today for details. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Proud supporters of the Preds, the Vols, and Vandy. Hiller, call the Happy Face truck today.
Players take different paths to the NHL. I mean, you know, you look at young players that we have. I mean, Tomasino's path is way different than Evangelista's. You could say that from an outside, let's just talk about two of our young guys. You take different paths to the NHL. Like we got a coach that took a very long path. I mean, he started in the Coast League. I sent him down 11 times 1 year when he was playing in the American Hockey League. And then, you know, he played in the American Hockey League, played in the NHL, and then, you know, 1,100 games later, it's a pretty impressive career. You look at Pekka Rinne, who was a sixth-round draft choice, and he played 3 years in Milwaukee. We actually had him as our backup goalie, I think, after 2 years. Yeah, if you remember, we signed Dan Ellis to be the Milwaukee goalie, and he ended up being our number one goalie. Heck, I had to go down for his third year in Milwaukee. And then, you know, now he's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame, and there's a big statue in front of Bridgestone for him. So everybody takes a different path.
That was Barry Trotz on the Midday Show. And if you listen to that whole interview of Barry on the Midday Show today, man, he is high on the prospects. And I'm not talking about the goalie. I'm talking about the skaters. You know, they got the development camp going on. That's kind of the second wave of prospects. But they've got a almost ready-to-go wave. And then the development camp guys, the Mullendykes and the Matthew Woods and the Russian kid they took last week, those guys are all in development camp. That's kind of the future wave. You know, that's on a couple of years down the road. But they got a lot of guys lined up. And Barry was, you know, singing their praises on the midday show. And even in the interview he did with the Athletics, Pierre LeBron, he talked about, hey, these are real prospects that we've got on their way that we expect to play a huge role on this team. And so let me say this about prospects. Because we had a long-standing rule on this program that for about 6 years really held true. Ian, do you remember the rule on this program?
About talking about prospects on your own time?
Yes. Do Preds prospects on your own time. I'd have people tell me, oh, Jared, look at Milwaukee. Look at what they are. I don't care. Do the prospects on your own time. Because we got caught up in the Ellie Tolvanen watch of 2018 when David Poile told us, you know, once he's done with the KHL, we're going to sign him and we're going to stick him right in the lineup for our Stanley Cup run. And they signed him and LaViolette played him in a couple of games and it was like, no. And Ellie Tolvanen is a third liner and like he's a power play specialist and that's just what he is. So I've always said, do the prospects on your own time. Because I don't have time to sit here. You tell me about some 19-year-old from Nova Scotia, and I'm sorry. Now, we did kind of walk that back for about the last year. Once the team decided they were going to tear it down, or at least reset, or whatever you want to call it, and they started acquiring prospects and picks in return, and the draft was in Nashville, it was kind of like, okay, you know, now we can kind of get into this some, and we can talk about Mullendike, or we can talk about Askarov, or we can talk about Wood or Kemmel or those guys. But they're still years away. But Barry is keen on these prospects. Now, Philip Tomasino was drafted 5 years ago. Like, it's time now for him to be good in the NHL. And they'll tell you, like Barry did, hey, his path might be a little different. So here's what I'll say about the young guys and the prospects, because if you're going to sign a bunch of 30-year-olds, what you need to have is you need to have young guys developing behind them that can start off as contributors and then can become stars. Now, they don't all have to be stars. I've always said, for every five prospects you have, one is likely to pop. So far, Evangelista is the one. Now, there is hope for Spencer Stastny, but we'll see. But there's really no telling. You got a handful of five prospects, and one guy could be taken fourth overall, and the other guy could be taken in the fifth round, and the fifth round guy is almost as likely as the first round guy to be good. I can't explain it to you other than to say that over the last 5 years of defense prospects that the Predators have had, who would have thought that Alexander Carrier was going to be the best of the group? I mean, Carrier was an afterthought. So here's what they have. They have two waves. They have the first wave. They have the second wave. The first wave, by my count, is Parson and Tomasino, Stastny, Delgazzo, Willsby, LaRue, Svechkov, and Schaefer. So Evangelista is the first guy. He's already in. He's in the club. Don't worry about him. But one or two of those guys, and it's only going to be one or two of those guys has to make it. Then there's the second wave of Mullendike, Wood, Kemble, that Russian kid that they drafted last
week.
Igor Surin, Teddy Stiga, who they took in the second round, those guys. You know, one of those guys is going to pop. But they better be good. Because this team right now is ready to win. And other than Stastny, they don't really need any of those guys yet. They might need a LaRue or somebody like that to fill out the lineup or something. But they really only need one guy right now. But down the road, as these guys get older, as O'Reilly gets older, as some of these guys start to age out of their deals, whether it's Lazan, Shin, Fabro, Nyquist, who's got 1 year left, Novak, who might stink, like, then you need somebody else. And if Barry's going to bank on the prospects and he's going to spend up to the cap and use all the cap space on Stamkos and Shea and Marchessault, and if he's going to do that, then you better be right that these guys are actually good. Like these, like some of these guys actually have to end up being good. They're not all going to be good, but some of them have to. Because over the previous waves, when the Predators have gotten really excited about a prospect lately, for the most part, they have not come to fruition. Fiala did, but he didn't do that here. Jimmy Vesey did not come to fruition. And I know Vesey is a legitimate NHLer. Vesey's not that good. Tolvanen did not come to fruition. Fabbro has been a disappointment. And I know Fabbro is a bottom pair defenseman, but he was a first round pick and they signed him right out of Boston University and stuck him on the big club. And it was like, he's the next guy. He's the next guy. Weber, Suter, Yossi, Ellis, Ekholm, Fabbro. And they were banking on those guys. Now, some of those drafts were depleted because they traded first-round picks for Cody Franzen and Ryan Hartman and Santarelli and things like that, so you don't have the same ammo that you had before. But it is something that if you're going to bank on these prospects, and it sounds the way Barry talks, it sounds like he is banking on these prospects, they better be good.
I wonder who could make, on offense, really specifically, which forward might make the biggest impact this year?
Well, I mean, we're taking Evangelista out of this, right?
Correct.
He's graduated. He's in the club.
Yeah, yeah. Just out of this group, like Parsonen, he showed flashes, played pretty well in Milwaukee towards the second half.
It's Parsonen and LaRue, right?
I'm wondering about Svechkov and if he actually has a chance to make a, you know, an impact offensively, but I worry that he's not a bottom six guy. And if they would put him on, you know, the third line.
So Barry was talking about this today on the midday show about wanting to have two old guys and one young guy per line.
Okay.
And so if he ends up having Tommy Novak center that second line with Stamkos and Marchessault, I guess you would count Novak as a young guy.
Sure.
So that's fine.
In that scenario, I would agree with that.
So then you would almost have to put Evangelista on the first line with Forsberg and O'Reilly, which I would not want to do, but I'm also not convinced that Luke Evangelista is a bottom six forward in the NHL, so that does concern me a little bit. Here's the problem I have with that. They tried that last year, and they put Parsonen on that first line with Forsberg and O'Reilly.
Didn't last long.
And it was a massive disappointment. And I wonder if, you know, Parsonen got put on that line as like a, hey, we're going to try to alleviate some of the pressure off of you by sticking you with Forsberg and O'Reilly, but in reality, it upped the pressure on him because it's like, wow, I'm on the first line with Forsberg and O'Reilly, and I got to get to their level, and if I don't get to their level, you know, I might stink, and the next thing you know, he's in Milwaukee. I wonder if that's really a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have been speaking a different tune about Tomasino now that the dust has settled. You know, after the end of the season, Andrew Burnett had some very harsh words for Philip Tomasino. It made me think that they had given up on him. And then Barry today kept bringing up Tomasino over and over and over again with the midday show. And Andrew brought him up on the show on Monday when we talked about kind of that next wave of guys that are banging at the door. I also, when I left out that second wave, this Gibson that they acquired last week, they traded a second-round pick to Detroit and some guy I've never heard of. They traded him to Detroit in order to get this Andrew Gibson. Alex Daugherty says that the Predators liked Andrew Gibson last year in the second round, traded up to 43 with Detroit, who also picked at 42, and Detroit took the Gibson kid at 42, and then got a second-rounder in order to part with Gibson this year or whatever. And I said, that's bad business on Detroit's part. Because then when Barry gets the opportunity to screw you, I would say go do it. Go take advantage of it if they're going to try to screw you. But they seem to love this Gibson kid. And I was reading Scott Wheeler in The Athletic, and he was writing he had Gibson ranked as the 12th best prospect in the Detroit system, but the Detroit system was the number two system in the NHL, and he said that he really likes Gibson and thinks he can be a third-pair defenseman in the NHL. Well, I don't think Barry Trotz, who's talking about taking big swings with the scouts, I don't think he's trading a second-round pick to try to get back a prospect that he thinks can be a third-pair defenseman. So he's probably also on that second wave of prospects. As a fan and as a kid, I used to do this with my baseball team. I was a Braves fan. I used to get really into this. And I would just think that all the things that they say these prospects are going to be, I just believed they would be. Like, I just got excited, and I was like, yeah, they say this guy, he's a top prospect, he's got a good fastball, he's going to be pitching in the big leagues. And it was about one out of every five. So when it comes to the first wave of these guys we're talking about, Parsonen, Tomasino, LaRue, Svechkov, that group, Schaefer, probably one guy's going to make it out of that group.
And I do wonder if this would help Brunette talk about wanting to roll those top nine, those three offensive lines, and how that could adjust things.
So, maybe.
I don't
see,
know.
To your point, that's where I think LaRue actually has the best shot, because I think he might be a bottom six forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so he could fit in there.
But, you know, Kiefer Sherwood probably not going to come back, so you'll have a spot in the fourth line.
Well, he's on Vancouver.
So
he's definitely not coming back.
Yeah.
But I was surprised to see he was in Vancouver. Vancouver, actually, they might actually have a pretty decent team. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Plus, coming up next, everybody is going to crap on this. Everybody is going to crap on it. But I actually think it's a fascinating thing to think about, because ESPN's 2025 mock draft is out, and they don't think very highly of what the Titans are going to do this upcoming season. We'll get to that next. Let's talk about Twice Daily first. I love Twice Daily. You can go twice a day. Go get a coffee in the morning. Go get one of the breakfast sandwiches in the morning. Come back at night, grab some drinks, grab whatever it may be. Stop by the Beer Cave, or you can order up a pizza there. You can order up a sandwich, a sub, a wrap. It's wonderful. I love Twice Daily. And Twice Daily snacks are the real deal. Made to order. You can get a huge warm pretzel and dip, a three-piece chicken tender snack, or spicy boneless chicken wings. You can order in-store or, like I do, via the Twice Daily app. All fresh and tasty, priced just right for your budget. I mean, I really do love using the Twice Daily app. No, there's no smoke there. I love it. That's Twice Daily. Twice Daily. What are you craving?
Teams are not going to move off of a first-round pick as easily as they would a second-round pick because of organizational pride. That's just the way it works. I mean, just look around the NFL. Like, it's the scholarship is that much bigger if you're the seventh pick in the first round versus the seventh pick in the second. I know he was like the second pick in the third, yeah, and the second. If this year is a total miss, and I don't think it will be for real, but if it is, moving off of a second-round pick a year from now is just a different calculus than having to admit error on a first-round pick.
That was Field Yates on our show at the Super Bowl saying, hey, I don't think it's going to be a disastrous year for Will Levis, but if it is a disastrous year for Will Levis, it is easier for the Titans to want to move on than if he's a first-round pick. And some of that's the money. Will Levis' total contract is just over $9 million for the 4 years that he signed to be the Titans quarterback. Anthony Richardson's with the Colts is $34 million. So sometimes it's easier to swallow the money when you just say, all right, let's just move on, when we realize that somebody's not the guy. So ESPN.com, Matt Miller, put out a new mock draft today. Don't know exactly why they decided to put out a mock draft.
July 4th reading, you know.
You know what? More credit to them. I'm here for that. Takes. And what they had was Carson Beck going number one overall. New England apparently has the worst record, but they have a trade. The Giants trade up to number one. Carson Beck goes number one. Shedeur Sanders, the Raiders trade up to number two. I think they trade with Carolina. I can't remember exactly. But Shedeur Sanders goes number two. I've already told you, I'm out on Shedeur Sanders. I don't want him. But the Raiders, that sounds like the perfect place for Shedeur Sanders and Dion and all of his bullcrap. And they have the Titans picking fourth. Now, the way that he decided who was picking where was based on ESPN's FPI. Now, Matt Miller does not have the Titans taking a quarterback with the fourth pick. Instead, he has the Titans taking James Pierce Jr., a pass rusher out of Tennessee. By the way, for all the UT fans out there that think that the Titans are slapping them in the face by drafting a Kentucky quarterback, how would you love that, wouldn't you? Couldn't bitch about that one. Matt Miller writes, quote, "This is a prove-it season for quarterback Will Levis as a second-year starter, but the early returns were good enough that we can forget about quarterback at the top of the draft for now." Okay. "Instead, the Titans could land my preseason number one overall player and an in-state prospect. At 6'5", 244, Pierce has special quickness around the edge, picking up 9.5 sacks last season. He also flashed his all-around game with a 52-yard pick six last year. Pierce would be an instant boost opposite Harold Landry III. By the way, I don't know if Harold Landry's going to be on this team after this year, but that's a different discussion for, you know, 9 months, 10 months down the road. Here's the thing, though. Matt Miller says this is a prove-it year for Will Levis, but for right now, let's say Levis is good enough. Don't worry about it. If the Titans pick fourth in the draft, which is what the ESPN FPI is predicting they will be doing, Will Levis will not be the quarterback of this team in 2025. You think the owner, who, even though last year the Titans could not decide if they wanted to be a rebuilding team or not a rebuilding team, I think I've decided if you can't pick for yourself if you're rebuilding or you're not rebuilding, you're rebuilding. Because with that offensive line, Joe Montana and Jerry Rice could not have done better. So they were rebuilding last year, and the owner still fired the coach and the coaching staff. So if you think the owner is going to accept a year in which they're picking fourth, I looked it up this morning. Arizona picked fourth last year. They won four games. If you win four games this year with Will Levis at quarterback, he will not be the quarterback next year. So I understand, you know, reading this and saying, hey, the first two quarterbacks are off the board in Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders. Tennessee sitting there at four. There's a pass rusher. You know what? Levis looked good enough last year. Maybe they don't need a quarterback. That's fine. If Tennessee's picking four, they're going to need a quarterback because Levis is not the guy if you win four games this year. Now, maybe they're not picking a quarterback because the Titans decide with a new stadium on the horizon that they're going to go pay Dak Prescott $60 million a year, but they are not picking a quarterback at four. I mean, excuse me, they are not running it back with Levis if they're picking at four. With Amy as the owner? No. I mean, if they end up picking fourth this year, somebody's getting fired, and it might be the quarterback. So, again, you know, July 4th reading, taking a look at the draft prospects, everything else. And don't get mad at Matt Miller when he puts out a mock draft and has the Titans picking four, because, again, he did not determine the draft order. It was ESPN's FPI, which has New England as the worst team in the league. And I hate to say this, but don't you think New England probably is the worst team in the league? So they've got you as the fourth worst team in the league. And again, while, you know, who knows if James Pierce Jr. is going to be a good pro or not. We've seen guys that are supposed to be the number one pick, and they end up not being the number one pick. Remember Matt Barkley? But if the Titans are sitting there at four because they won four games, they're not going to do what Arizona did. Arizona totally tore it down. Kyler played the last half of the year coming back off the ACL. And Arizona, in spite of the fact that there is zero evidence that says Kyler Murray is a franchise quarterback, Arizona's decided, no, we're good with Kyler, because that way they could take Marvin Harrison Jr. The Titans will not do that. The Titans will either sign a Dak Prescott or a Kirk Cousins, or they will draft a quarterback. Quinn Ewers, I think, is probably the third best quarterback after those two guys. But they are not going to roll it back with Levis if they're not very good next year. And I hope Levis understands that. You know, this year, everybody's on their knees talking about how great Levis is. And I'm talking about inside that building. You know, we talk about the sunshine pumping and how great everything is. It will not be that way if they win four games. And I hope he knows that. I hope he knows that, you know, they looked at Vrabel the same way they looked at him. Oh, he's the best. Just saying. 615-737-1025. Speaking of Vegas odds, the FPI is somewhat formed off the Vegas odds. Speaking of the Vegas odds, the Predators have skyrocketed up the Las Vegas odds. Where do they sit? Not just with Vegas, but in Jared Stillman's rankings. Where do they sit in the Western Conference? And I was surprised when I did this exercise. We'll do that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's 102.5 The Game.